Welcome to MGO Podcast 9.27. You know, we've had a lot of podcasts. Whenever I leave the house, my son just says podcast to me over and over again, making him the youngest person in history to sound like a hipster.
Good man.
Well, you wake up the day after, and it just rains the whole day.
It felt right.
And then it's just windy, and it's snowy, and it's April, and you're like...
There might be hail.
I didn't know I could do this with my mind.
Yeah.
I guess we are doing it collectively.
Yeah, no, the state of Michigan brought that storm through.
You know, I'm not really that upset. Like, I didn't.
No, this feels very different from the last one. I will say that.
Yeah, I had a real good tweet. Real good performing tweet performs for me about how this time we lost to a fun team and a good dude instead of a criminal sex vampire.
You know, it does feel nice to have it be not the criminal sex vampire.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Jay Wright and John Beilein are clearly like bros.
Yes.
Like just all of their interactions are like, well, I'm so happy that I'm playing this guy.
And those guys have like coached in the same leagues before. Like, Jay Wright told a story about how before the game about how, like, when he was an assistant coach and Beilein was the head coach with, like, the only guy in the conference who could actually offer a freaking scholarship area.
He was D3.
He was below a division, yeah. And it was like you never wanted to see John at the gym, but he was the nicest guy ever.
So, I mean, you know, Brunson does a lot of kind of, like, annoying head jerking, but other than that, you know.
Yeah, like, and,
if
you
I
know,
have to lose a national championship game, Villanova is pretty much the best case scenario.
Yeah, and I wasn't as upset at Brunson as some of the people in the comments were.
It
was a little annoying, but like, that's his game. Like, you know, he's an NBA player, and that's how NBA players play, yeah. And it does kind of work. And also, Michigan has a bit of the, like, Xavier Simpson is an NBA type defender. So, like, sometimes you get that where, I mean, Michigan players talk about, does he get away with a lot of tricks?
No.
Never.
Never.
I mean, you know, of course he did.
We are pure as a driven.
The players say these absurd things about how Xavier Simpson gets away with these little grabs and holds and tricks and whatever. And
fake news.
It helps him defend. And perhaps Jalen Brunson is the offensive version of that, is all I'm saying.
Fake news. I don't really have a lot of analysis about this game.
Yeah, Dante DiVincenzo made the shots.
Well,
the shots were not ones that I was necessarily upset that Michigan was giving up for the most part.
Four of his five makes are off the dribble jacks.
Yeah. And
usually from 3 or 4 feet behind the line.
And when a dude's 6'5", you can't guard that.
And Brunson actually had a really great play at the end of the first half where he went two for one at the top of the key.
Yes.
But that was also like a 27-foot off the dribble. Well, probably 25-foot. But it was a long off the dribble three.
It was an early dagger.
Right. And that's half their makes from three.
Yeah.
So Michigan did what they needed to do, you know, prevent catch and shoot looks, hold them, contest.
They keep the 3-point gap. You know, they only have four fewer attempts than Villanova in this game. But, you know, the makes, there's a bit more of a gap.
Yeah. And so Michigan is 3 of 23. Their worst performance from three in 5 years, except for, I think, the South Carolina game.
Yeah.
From like a couple years ago that you just now remember.
From last year. The one when Sendarius Thornwell was on that team.
Right.
That was the Final Four team. That we did not think was a Final Four team at the time.
They weren't. I know that they went to the Final Four. No. But they still weren't the Final Four
team. I mean, we didn't think they'd ever even sniff it. Unfortunately, this game very much disproves the Mo Wagner first three-pointer.
of all the times,
yeah, it was really the one time where we could have really used that one to come through, because this game does start off promising. I will admit that, you know, my hopes got got up early. Chrysler was rocking.
Yeah, well, they're up 7. That's a good reason to have your hopes up.
And then DiVincenzo checks in and just does not miss. And Michigan's offense starts bogging down in ways where...
Bogging down?
I don't necessarily think bogging... I mean, they just aren't hitting shots. Yeah. And they're getting increasingly... Like, you can see Wagner getting, you know, as he would say or as Beilein would say, emotionally drunk. You remember that Wagner played 36 minutes.
He did look very tired, those weren't just 36 minutes.
Yeah, those were 36, like, drag your team to the championship game
minutes. I look like Ricky Doyle
after
this game minutes.
And he looked like Ricky Doyle, at the first media timeout of this game.
6 minutes into this game, he's, tapping out.
Because that was also a very fast start to that game. There were not many whistles, because that was the first media timeout, and it came 2 minutes after it normally does.
Well, he's keeping Michigan's... bacon in check. That's not what I meant to say.
You know,
he's scoring repeatedly on the offensive end. He's doing a lot of work.
Yeah, he also has one of the more difficult assignments in having to wrangle Omari Spellman on the other end.
Yeah, so a lot of effort being put in there. Still, if you could have just not needed an Akeem Olajuwon performance in the semi, maybe you have a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, this did kind of feel like Michigan's poor previous performances, offensive performances in the tournament, coming back to bite them in an accumulative way, as well as just they also repeated themselves. But the fact that they weren't able to ease up on Loyola and in fact needed to really step on it to win that game, I think does eventually have at least a small impact on this game, in a game where Michigan really needed every edge that they could get, because as we should probably repeat, they ran into the best team in the country.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I thought for 30 minutes of this game, they were getting the best they could possibly get from Beilein.
Yes.
Michigan shoots 66% from two in this game.
Yeah.
They get a ton of looks at the basket. You know, some of it is contested. Xavier hits a couple of fairly contested buckets that look difficult.
Yeah, but they're not turning the ball over. They're not playing sloppy. They're running their offense. They're
getting wide open looks from three.
Yeah.
Duncan Robinson's in the corner. Moe's in the corner. Z's in the corner. Not Z. Mar's in the corner.
Yeah.
And, they just... At one point, they're 3 of 18, and I think all of those are reasonable looks within the frame of the offense, except for, a couple.
And then you get into desperation mode late and miss all of those.
The last five are bad, and they miss all of those. But I just feel like... if they're just 6 of 18 at that point, they're 9 points closer, they don't get into desperation mode, and maybe they have a shot. And Villanova probably doesn't get caught because they're Villanova, but it just felt like a game that should have been a game and wasn't.
Yeah, no, it did feel, and it felt like Michigan was so many times on the verge of making it a game, and they were one or two shots away, and they would miss those shots.
There was one particular point in the second half when they got it down to 12 or 10, and it felt like maybe this is going to be it, and then DiVincenzo had two consecutive off-the-dribble looks. The second of which
was
horrible.
Yes, that is when I stopped taking notes.
The second one was just heat check, heat check, heat check.
Yeah.
And it goes down, and you're like...
So it goes.
Well, I hope nobody searches your Twitter history tonight, bud, because that would be deeply unfair to a 13-year-old.
It sure would, and was.
And there it is. I mean, Michigan got as far as they could get. They got betrayed by their own three-point shooting. Otherwise, played a very, very good game. The only other problem, I think, was the fact that Villanova got 12 offensive boards. That was...
Yes.
That was a problem.
Spellman being a huge factor, DiVincenzo falling. And there were a couple that were there were some frustrating ones, long three-point misses. But I think there was an immediate turnover after this, but they did get a rebound on a free throw where there were four Michigan players standing around, and the one Villanova guy that was even in the lane got the ball, and it was you got to do better than that.
Although a couple of those sequences, like Villanova got three offensive rebounds in a row and still didn't score.
Yeah, I think the offensive rebounding impact in this game is overstated. Omari Spellman went 3 for 6 on twos. So, I mean...
Yeah.
And I don't think all of his makes were putbacks, and he had 4 of their offensive rebounds.
No.
So, I thought, Wagner does plays a good game outside of missing
turnovers
and, a couple threes and getting frustrated into a couple turnovers.
A couple of those turnovers were just being tired.
Yes. I mean, you know, because he goes 33 minutes in this game, too.
Yeah.
And then...
just means he should come back because he needs to have more endurance to play a 48-minute NBA game.
Yeah.
That will be played with extreme intensity in the middle of February when the Atlanta Hawks play the Oklahoma... no, they're actually kind of good.
I've sat through too many games against Houston Minnesota to complain about the NBA regular season. But
the Hornets versus the Jazz.
I mean, but to kind of, you know.
Is that a boring February game? I don't know.
Not really, actually. Both those teams have actually become pretty exciting. That's the problem, is you're going to try to find NBA teams that are boring, and you're going to keep mentioning teams with, say, Kemba Walker or Rudy Gobert, who are very fun to watch.
Wizards.
A fun team with John Wall and Bradley Beal. You're in trouble here, Brian.
The Spurs?
Actually, this year, yes! Oddly enough,
I knew it.
Not a particularly fun team to watch for the first time since the 90s.
Yes. Boom.
Congratulations.
The Pistons.
Yeah, they're not great.
Spurs Pistons.
I watch national games now.
Yeah. Anyway.
If I was a rich man, I'd be a league pass guy. That'd be my thing. But anyway, this game, you know,
The one that we were talking about.
It was one of those games where, like, I mean, you needed Charles Matthews to have one of his games, and he didn't. I mean, he tries valiantly and gets a few buckets, but yeah. Also has a few turnovers.
I just think they need to hit some threes.
Hit some threes.
Like, they needed a 40% from three game, and they did everything else except that. But that's what they needed to do to beat the best team in the country.
Apparently, I don't know. I don't know what they needed to do with DiVincenzo, but I mean, there's just nothing you can do about that.
If Michigan hits 40% from three in this game, they win. And DiVincenzo is not the hero. Someone else is. And Michigan proved over the last six games of the regular season that was well within their capabilities. And then...
yeah, just but it was also something that would have been a performance outside of their...
norm. Yeah, but that's what it was going to take.
Yeah, right? It was going to take an important performance above their head. That's the... unfortunate and shocking flaw, given that it's a John Beilein team.
Right, yeah.
And
it didn't happen.
It just didn't break the right way.
And Duncan Robinson, the stat that we didn't break was the fact that if he gets 6 points, Machine wins.
He gets zero in this game, and that hurts.
There you go.
That hurts a lot.
There you go. But, you know.
Shout out to Rock for pouring in 23 pretty legitimate points, including making every single one of his two-pointers in his final college game.
Yeah, but so that's the game. We're going to stop talking about the game. That's what happened.
Yes.
But the season, you know, I think going into the season, I was like, let's make the tournament.
It felt like a gap year.
Get to second round, and I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah. No, it was one of those where, like, you know, get an all right seed. You know, try to get in the upper half.
Don't be an 8-9, be a 7 or a 10.
Yeah, and, you know, any sort of noise you make in the Big Ten is a bonus because this year was set up to be Michigan State and then Purdue and then everybody else. And, I mean, heading into the season, it was Minnesota and Northwestern who were being talked about as the next tier.
Who could have foreseen a down year for the Big Ten?
In case we have forgotten... And also, who could have foreseen those prognostications maybe not going so well? I'm not pointing to myself or anything as we sit in this very visual podcast. but we're staring, to be honest, I mean, this is another segment. We're staring at a similar type year next year, too.
Yeah, that is another segment.
But
don't spoil the segment.
Okay, I apologize. But yeah, I mean, you know, like...
let's wrap it with our feelings about this basketball team.
There was so much to like about this year from both, I mean, promising things about, like, the defense becoming this good this quickly is something I don't think anybody could have expected.
No.
It's something that looks quite likely to hold, especially with the talent that they're bringing in and the fact that John Teske is probably taking over at center.
You know, there's always going to be some regression from third in the country. So I'm not expecting...
yes. No, I'm not necessarily a top... but, like, you know, give John Beilein a top 15 defense and exactly. You're cooking with gas. And, you know, the rest is, you know, It was a year where Beilein really showed that, you know, in addition to his flexibility that he has added in the last couple of years, really paying off, where he has finally given up coaching the defense himself and really turning it over in a way that he has not before.
He's always been flexible. And this might be
he's been flexible with his, like, more with his offense, but he has always been somebody who has been a control freak. He's been a flexible control freak. But, I mean, he has said repeatedly that the amount of control that he has turned over to first Billy Donlin and then Luke Yaklich has been far, far more than he was ever comfortable or willing to give to an assistant coach before. And to do that with Yaklich, a guy that he brought in who he had no connection with prior to the season.
No, he, like, scouted him.
After Illinois State's coach told him to look at the guy, which, like, is incredible.
They turned him down first because, like, I don't know this guy. And then, like, he calls back, and then he, like...
Like took a look at the numbers, maybe, and was like, you know.
And then he gets, like, video of the guy, like, teaching.
Yeah. He watches literal practice tape.
Which is very John Beilein.
Yeah, it's the most John Beilein.
I think he might have just run out of practice tape to watch, and he's like, wow, I can get some from that.
No, he had a hankering.
I can get some from the Redbirds.
It's the one time John Beilein gets a little fiendish is when he runs out of practice film.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I mean, you know.
John Beilein is Tyrone Biggums for practice film.
I've enjoyed this visual
this
a lot.
Is a new low or a new high for the podcast? I can't tell.
I think we're going low.
Okay. But,
I mean, you know, the rest of this year, you know, we got to see Charles Matthews go from a guy who had a lot of expectations to a guy who struggled a lot to a guy who bounced back and really looks like somebody who...
He had a U-shaped season.
Who could be a, you know, potentially be the alpha dog player next year. And I'm certainly not ready to rule out that Jordan Poole could be that, have that kind of Stauskas-Levert breakout.
Oh, God, no. I think that's
the most likely scenario. Boy, would that be fun. I mean, this was just, I approached this year all the way up until, I'd say, the Big Ten tournament semifinal.
Yeah.
As, like, this was all gravy. And then they finally just won enough where it was like, okay, I'm getting greedy here, and they're looking real good, and they could do it if they make some shots. And, they got one game away.
Well, you know, they entered that Ohio State game as they were, like, on the bubble per Jerry Palm, which was not...
Maybe not the most accurate projection.
They were very top of the bubble, but they were on a bubble watch column.
Yes.
Before that Ohio State game.
Multiple bubble watch columns. I mean, I was looking around. Yeah. They keep track. And, you know, some of those bracket matrix
ones were in the should-be-in category.
A little late to catch up to Michigan, too. And, you know, there's some weird seeds out there.
They give it to Ohio State. They give it to Penn State. They absolutely annihilate Maryland.
Yes.
We're going to ignore the Iowa game. They annihilate Nebraska. They give it to Michigan State, and they give it to Purdue. None of those games...
Are close.
Iowa's the only one, and that's another game where Michigan just shoots 0 for a million from three.
Yeah.
When they're not doing that, they're one of the best teams in the country, and then they do that in the tournament, and they still make the final. So,
yeah.
Like, it's... for a program that didn't really look like it was maintaining after the Final Four Elite Eight years, this is a snapback, and what a joyous one.
Absolutely. I mean, talk about a fun team to follow.
Well, we just did a This Week's Obsession about, like, the best moments, and I was like, we keep having
to throw extra ones in.
Right. Like, I was like, okay.
Like, we can't leave this out.
This is going to be over, like, now, and then I thought of, like, three more. It's just like... So you have the
like mark. Seth literally reminds me at the end, like, hey, you should probably mention the play that is your Twitter avatar.
That's right, yeah.
So I have to go back in and edit that in earlier because I'm embarrassed, deeply embarrassed.
Like Duncan Robinson blocking the soul out of a guy and the Mar glasses game and, you know, the various Nick Ward trying to be tough moments.
Yes, Nick Ward shows up twice.
Please
in that post,
come back,
quite
Nick
prominently.
Ward, please, I just
no. Let Nick Ward just for Nick Ward's sake. Let Nick Ward be free.
I don't. Yeah, he's been dunked on enough.
Yeah, by his own dang coach.
Well, and other people.
Yeah. Also, a lot of Wolverines, but yeah, you know, yeah, a joyous year in which, you know. I mean, you head in. I mean, there were so many things that came together this year, including, like, you know, Michigan State talking up about their, like, best team that maybe Izzo's ever had. We don't even get them at Chrysler.
Yeah.
And to womp them twice in pretty, I mean, like, I've got enough Izzo gifts for the rest of my life.
Well, yeah, there's like 2 minutes left in that game and Michigan's up 10 and we just get like 15 full minutes of Izzo eating his liver.
Yeah, it's the only time I'm like, I'm glad basketball functions the way it does at the end of games. Because it is dragging this out beautifully.
If we had Derek Walton, it would have felt like that. Since we didn't, I hated it.
That is probably a bit of a hindsight take, I will admit.
Well, it's kind of
I'm enjoying it, but there is that part of me that's but...
Once it got down to about 30 seconds and they were still fouling, I'm like, okay, no, I enjoy this.
Yeah, now it's okay. Now they can just keep cutting to Izzo and the bench. But yeah, I mean, to have that come in, have like the FBI scandal hit at the same year that like Beilein hits this glorious run and really like, if there's any question, and I don't really think there should have been after last year's run, especially when you take into account the 2 years in a row of Caris LeVert injuries that preceded this. I mean, this has removed any doubt that John Beilein is an elite coach, even when you don't account for that he is not cheating. I said this after sometime very late at night after the championship game, and I very much meant it. There's not another program in the country in any sport I would rather cover.
Alabama football would be all right if you were an Alabama fan.
Yeah,
that would be all right.
That'd be okay. But to be honest, like, I love walking into like the post game pressers in this one. I don't know if I'd feel the same way. I don't think many Alabama reporters feel like that.
That is true. That is true.
Like, I take a lot of joy in acting like a beat writer for this team when I can, and that's not something I ever thought I would say about anything.
Yeah. Well, it's been a good year. I have a lot of good feelings about it, and I have more good feelings when I think about next year.
Let's go.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGO Blog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlet, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
All right, so this is what we do. Position by position, we're going to give approximate minutes. We're going to give our feels.
Okay.
Point guard, Xavier Simpson, Eli Brooks, David DeJulius.
This is one of the toughest ones to figure out.
It
this
is.
This might be the toughest one to figure out right off the bat.
It is.
Because...
So, Xavier Simpson, elite defensive player, clear limitations. You really want him to improve his shooting at least a little bit.
Like, yes, and my worry here is that the... The indicators are not very good there.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at it, free throw percentage is a major indicator of how well a player can shoot in general.
Yes.
This is obviously quite poor. And also, he started the season up until February 1st. He was 11 for 24 on three-pointers. To close the season, he was 6 for 35.
Right.
And these are all, for the most part, wide-open looks.
Some of them are a little deep because he's shooting over switches.
But that's part of a strategy too. I mean, something you need to do.
What I feel is like the early start was like, we don't have to check him at all. He's tum-tum.
Yeah.
And then the later shots are like, we do have to check him. Not very much.
Yes. But. He has at least established himself. Like he established himself as a driving threat.
Yeah.
And as both a drive and dish and a very surprising drive and finish threat by the end of the season. Where defenses do have to guard him in a way that they cannot defend Tum-Tum, because you can just ignore that dude. Simpson's not a guy you ignore, and obviously what he brings on defense, I fully expect him to be the starting point guard next year and play 30 minutes a game because of the way he sets the tone on that end and the fact that he knows the offense as well as anybody and
yeah.
can run it and finish... I mean,
so to me, there's a big difference in this team between 35-minute Xavier Simpson and 25-minute Xavier Simpson.
Yeah, if you can run that guy out there, have him be your defensive ace, and if you need a guy to go in there and just completely lock down
right.
a specific opponent, have him be that guy, and you're not losing much. You're not losing anything in terms of your ability to run the offense. You might lose something in terms of. The offense itself and putting the ball in the basket, but you're at least going to be getting into your sets. And we are talking about a player who plays for John Beilein. I expect his shot to get better, but
I
can't say how much because,
yeah.
you know,
he did improve.
He provides a challenge for John Beilein.
Yeah.
I will say that he did improve a little bit from the line. There are mechanical things that they can work on. So I think there is some hope there, but do I expect him to be a guy who's going to take a dribble off a screen, pull up and hit a three? No,
but if he can just hit like 35% on open ones.
Yeah. If he can do that on spot ups, he's playing 35 minutes a game. Probably.
I hope not. Just because I have a very large crush on David DeJulius and his crazy single game videos. I do too,
but you know, true freshman in Beilein system. I mean, even Burke, if we're talking about what we want out of the point guard position next year,
like
freshman Burke, if you go back and look at those numbers, there's a little shakiness in there.
Well, David DeJulius is not going to come on and have to have like 27% usage.
No, he can be like freshman Derek Walton.
Yeah.
And he is a guy who compares quite closely to freshman Derek Walton.
So if you watch these videos, the vast majority of his threes in high school are off the triple.
Yes, he is a guy who just rises and fires.
Like usually after...
He's a modern point guard.
Three or four crossovers that get people going, ugh!
Yeah. And, he's already got like the senior Walton, like set him up and knock him down thing going.
So if he can come in and maybe not be a starter, but be a guy who you can give 15 minutes a game, especially in situations where, you know, the opposing point guard isn't very threatening.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Michigan's down and they need to catch up and maybe they want some threes. And like, or if Eli Brooks comes through and has a second year Beeline jump.
Yes.
Or he can play 10 to 15
minutes. Yeah, because we should not rule that out all.
And
we're talking about Beeline point guards. Jay Wright went after him. Wright went after him hard.
And brought up apropos of nothing in a press conference that they really thought they had him and were disappointed when he didn't go there. So, like, don't give up on Eli Brooks. But, like, to me, like, Xavier Simpson is the perfect point guard for several situations. Are we playing Carson Edwards? Yes. But, you know, if he's having an off game or Michigan just needs some shooting out there because they might have a couple of non-shooters on the floor for long stretches. Like having that second option at point guard feels pretty important if Michigan is going to be like an elite team.
Yeah, it's nice to have a guy who can turn Cassius Winston into a corn cob, but it's also nice to have somebody who can knock down a three off the dribble.
And, you know, the end of games, I think it's going to be DeJulius time because he's...
We'll see. I mean, we could see kind of a starter-closer situation like what was sort of formulating mid-season, except in reverse.
Yeah.
Yeah. A point guard is going to be fascinating to see shake out, and a whole bunch of it is going to be determined by off-season development.
Here's your favorite one, shooting guard.
Jordan Poole. All Jordan Poole all the time.
And
Adrian Nunez, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
I like him as a. I mean, you start getting into like we might be playing a lot of players next year, depending on how many defections there are.
I kind of feel like Nunez gets pushed out, and what they'll do is they'll like move, they'll kick Matthews down and maybe play a couple of guys.
I don't think that happens because, I mean, like we're talking about, this is a team where the one thing you kind of worry about, especially if Wagner leaves, is where are you getting your outside shooting?
Yeah, but like. The guys they'd be bringing into the 3 and 4 are going to be like Iggy and Johns.
But I mean, those guys might take time to develop. Like those guys are, they might be like Iggy is like his shot is a work in progress.
I feel like this is a thing that we should be talking about later, and we should let you.
But Nunez is a dead. Like Nunez is a different type of shooter. Nunez is like DeJulius, a guy who takes a ton of his shots off the bounce. Also is quite good at catch and shoot. Has like.
He's
got that form that makes you look at him and go like Duncan Robinson looks like that. Like this is really, really, really nice form. Like the mechanics are good.
And
he gets it out quick.
I keep going back to that 24/7 article where, you know, Nunez is talking about his recruitment, and there's a quote from Beeline, or it might be from Nunez saying what Beeline said to him, where it was like, you know, you have a rise on your jump shot, so you can get it off under pressure, which is not something that we have a lot of on the roster.
Yes.
We specifically use Robinson as an example of a guy who, you know, when he's checked, it's tough for him to get a shot off. And that is not the case with Nunez, who is a quick release, who has a high release. And in his highlight videos, you know, he does do it off the bounce. He has those, like, hammer cuts that Purdue runs.
It will remind you of what DiVincenzo did to Michigan. I'm sorry to bring it up again.
No, it's fine.
It is a comparison that is worth making in this case. And I think, like, you know,
you think
for a lot of the same reasons that Jordan Poole was difficult to keep off the court this year, which is that, you know, if you can really shoot, that's a skill that's going to translate, especially if you can rise up and do it, and especially if you've got range.
And Nunez did take a post-grad year, so he's a little bit older.
Yeah, so Nunez, I think, will come in more ready to play than I think some people expect, and he's got a very playable skill.
All right, well, so you've convinced me. But we've been speaking about people not named Jordan Poole for this whole segment.
Yeah, we have, and I need to go back to that because I am very much expecting a Stauskas level breakout here. And if you want to go with the LeVert level breakout, that's fine because I 100% believe that LeVert would have had that breakout that year if Nick Stauskas didn't exist. It would have happened a year earlier. It would be, I mean, we've already seen his obvious potential as a shooter. His obvious willingness to take on a large portion of the offense, his very quick first step, his ability to finish at the basket. He's got a great handle. He's got a lot of moves that fit together. Like, his jab step is nasty, and that sets up a lot. Because sometimes that jab step is just him running by you.
Yeah.
And when you've got a guy who can just rise up and shoot a three like he can off of that jab step, you really put defenders in a bind with a guy like that.
He missed the shot, but he had one against DiVincenzo where...
It was that. He made him step back.
It looked like that Powerade commercial.
Yeah. It was just... Yeah,
it broke the ankle.
Whoa. Yeah. So, I mean, Poole's got a lot of that in him. He's only going to get better. I am kind of looking into this like... We might want to really appreciate this year, Jordan Poole.
I kind of feel like his decision making is going to be a year away from being like super excellent.
Could, although
he's a heat check machine,
he is a heat check machine, but he still shoots the ball really well.
He's only 36%, and I think that's more shot selection than shooting quality. I mean, he's a dead eye from
and the other thing is his assist rate. Got improved dramatically throughout the season. If you go first half of the year, I'll use the same splits that I used for Xavier Simpson's shooting stats. Unfortunately, up until February 1st, 7.2 assist rate. After, it's up to 11.5. Still not stellar, but a significant difference. And I think if you cut that to even later in the season, it gets more.
Yeah,
more pronounced, and his turnover rate stays. His season turnover rate is under 13. He's a guy who, because of his ball handling and his passing ability, I mean, that guy's got vision. That guy, some of his turnovers were passes that his teammates weren't ready for. And I think they'll be more used to it once they've played with him, you know, as in practice as the first team shooting guard a lot. You might see a rise in turnover rate a little bit as he takes on more of a role, but I also think you're going to see a big jump in assist rate.
Oh, no.
And you'll see a guy who can create his own shot in a way that Michigan hasn't had since
his second Karras. Best comparable on KenPom is freshman Grayson Allen.
Well, he hasn't tripped anybody.
Sorry about that, guys.
So, he is on the complete polar opposite of the hateable spectrum, so that's good.
I think that people will...
Oh, people will turn on Poole quickly once he starts tearing up the Big Ten. Because Stauskas was also a very lovable freshman and then became a very hateable sophomore.
If Wagner comes back, the Wagner-Poole combination is like, that's going to be the most hated pick and roll in America.
Oh, and I want to see it so bad. I want to see it so bad.
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice.
Because, and I think either way, now that you bring up the pick and roll, I think that is going to be where Poole thrives. It's how we've seen Michigan guards and wings break out, is increased usage in that when they show the potential and learn how to kind of pick defenses apart by making the reads on that.
He's going to be super good at turning it down.
And Poole has already showed really good instincts on stuff like that. In offensive instincts in general, there was a play that ended up in a mailbag or a basket bullets. They've all run together at this point that I think Ant Wright pointed out at some point where Poole just took like a little like false dribble towards the lane that managed to open up a huge amount of space for Charles Matthews that gave him a wide open transition three. He does a lot of little advanced stuff like that I don't think people necessarily notice all the time, but especially since a lot of his game is very flashy.
He also takes some bad shots.
He will take some bad shots. He will make some of those bad shots.
I feel like there's going to be a couple of moments in the season when Beeline...
Oh, he's going to get yanked in frustration. There will be some sideline moments.
Yeah.
There will be some teachable moments. That's another reason why I think Adrian Nunez will get in, is they will need some shooting to get on the court when those teachable moments occur.
But, I mean, Poole is going to be an easy pick.
He's going to be a star next year.
A breakout player in the league this year.
I think he's got first-team all-conference written all over.
All right. Well, let's talk about small forward, which will be Charles Matthews' jam for the large portion of the the season.
Unless we get caught very off guard by him going pro, but nobody seems to be indicating that that would happen, including really Charles Matthews. So I just want to get that out there in case people would get angry that we, you know, jinxed it by assuming.
So Matthews is in a similar situation to Simpson where he's a great defender. He's got an NBA body for the position. He just needs to be able to shoot some. And his late season improvement at the free throw line was on more attempts, and it was with his natural shooting motion. So maybe, you know, you get a little bit of help there, but his finish from the three-point line in the season was also not great.
Yeah, he's another one. He goes 10 for 35 down the stretch. Which is the year. I mean, that's not a high volume. I don't want to put a ton into that.
Right.
And his shot, like, unlike Simpson, his Matthew's shot actually looks pretty good.
Yeah.
And, I don't think there's a ton of mechanical changes that they need to make.
Yeah, and he's, like, he's...
Some of it's confidence.
He's got the offense down. He's got the defense down. Like, this is an offseason where he can just go in the gym and shoot jumpers until his arm falls off.
Yeah, and I think the other... And, because I kind of expected the thing he was more going to have to do was learn how to dribble into the paint without losing it. But he made some major strides in the last month of the season on that front. I think there's still some improvement to go there. But I think he's going to benefit a lot from Poole quite possibly becoming the focal point of the offense. Because Poole is somebody who can take a lot of pressure off of him, allow him to be more of a cutter and finisher. And Poole will be a guy who can find that.
Yeah, because Poole's replacing Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman, a guy who, until very, very late in his senior year, was a 16% usage guy.
Yeah, he was a role player.
I think we can comfortably predict that Poole will not be a 16% usage guy.
Indeed. Indeed. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Matthews is best served, as we found early in the season, you know, he's best served as more of a tertiary guy than, you know, like your number one option.
Yeah,
like,
I want his usage to be 20%. That's what I want.
And I want most of his shots to come at the rim.
That would be nice.
And I think, there's a chance with him that he breaks out as a shooter and is just... A really awesome player next season. I could see it happening. It's a tough ask with the free throw percentage where it is with Beilein, but we have seen him pull some guys up before.
He could pick it up into the low 60s for the last couple months of the season.
Yeah, he hit 60% since February.
So like that's at least a hint that he could maybe take a step forward.
Yeah,
and he doesn't have to take a huge step forward. I mean, he's a 30% 3-point shooter. Like, again, if he can get it to 35, that's kind of a game changer for Michigan.
Yeah, and I think something we overlooked for a lot of the season, he had a really strong impact on the defensive boards. He is a really good rebounder and athlete. He's got a good sense for the ball. His ball skills need to improve, but I like his basketball sense, his doggedness on both ends of the floor. I mean, that's a guy where you don't have to worry about effort.
No.
Ever. Not that you ever really do with most of Michigan's players, but but Matthews is a guy who you know is going to bring it, who's got the athleticism where he's going to match up just fine against any team.
So if he's on the court for 30 minutes, who's got the other 10?
I would suspect Iggy Brazdeikis.
Okay.
So that would be for the recruiting unfamiliar. He ended up at number 75 on the composite, but he's from Canada, and depending who you talk to, he's a guy who might have ended up more in the top 40 range,
Rivals,
potential McDonald's All-American type,
Rivals
if you listen to the right guy.
Rank him?
Yeah, that's real stupid.
Gave him 5 stars.
Yeah.
So,
and that's very much messing with his composite, because 247 does not know what to do with a 5-star unranked. that doesn't work.
No.
What are you doing, Rivals? But Brazdeikis is he's a dude who gets buckets. I mean, that's his main thing. He is a 6'8 scoring wing. He does a lot of that by getting to the basket. He's got a lot of the pick and roll skills that you'd like to see starting to develop pretty early.
Goes both hands, finishes with both hands.
Yeah, a strong array of moves. His shot. Form looks good, even though the numbers haven't caught up to it yet. So potentially with an offseason with Beilein, even before his freshman year, that might start catching up. But it's probably more realistic to expect him to be a guy that you'd rather see going towards the basket than firing off the dribble, at least early on. But as a guy who could be instant offense as the, off the bench, I like him quite a bit. That's a quality, I mean, potential sixth man on this team.
All right, power forward looks fairly straightforward, but who gets the minutes there is going to be an interesting question, because you have Isaiah Livers, who comes off a freshman year where, you know, he starts, but he doesn't really start.
Yes.
And he has the lowest usage on the team. He's has kind of this mid season where he's hitting a bunch of threes, and he looks like a guy who can at least fill that corner shooter role, kind of drops off a little bit after that. Doesn't really create a whole lot of offense himself. Kind of feels a little bit like early DJ Wilson.
Yes, there is a bit of like still finding his way out there aspect to his game that was still showing up. I mean, especially when, like, you saw when Michigan moved him to a five a couple times late in the season, he was totally lost. And that's something where, like, they could, you could do that with an experienced player, and they at least have enough familiarity with how the offense works as a whole to make it look a little better out there. And that's no knock on Livers. You know, Beeline's offense is a lot for learning one position, let alone a completely different one that you never play on the fly. But there are some legitimate questions about how much offense he can provide. He did finish the season 1-for-12 on threes over his last 14 games, which is just not a lot of volume, and he's not hitting them. Not a lot of aggression. His free throw rate is almost non-existent all year, and would actually look worse if he took more two-point shots. But promising athlete, promising offensive rebounder. I liked his passing ability out of high school. We didn't get to see much of that from him this year at all, but the offense wasn't running through him. Great hustle guy, great energy guy.
He's really the biggest X factor on the team.
Yeah, because if he's a guy who suddenly starts knocking down 35-40% of his threes, that's a game changer. If he can spread the floor like that, because I do like Brandon Johns a lot, but plugging a true freshman into a Beeline team can be tough.
What Johns brings is a physical presence that I don't think Livers has. So he's,
yes, he's got a certain nastiness to him.
He's, as they say, jacked up.
Yes,
he looks like he could play for Florida State.
No, we should wait and see what happens to Livers after Camp Sanderson.
That's
too.
True. That's a good point.
That might be a gap that isn't really there.
And this is a spot where Brez Dikas could also get significant minutes.
Yes. Iggy could very much play the four. He's listed at 6'8", 220. He's actually listed as bigger than Brandon Johns, although when you look at the two, you're like...
They're pretty similar.
I don't know.
Brez Dikas isn't as defined.
And also, like, high school heights and weights, you don't want to put too much stock in. You don't know when they were updated. You don't know who was doing the measuring.
Both probably around 6'8".
Yeah.
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, 6'8", you know, somewhere probably... It'll probably come in somewhere in the 215 to 220 range. Probably will have to work on redistributing some of that in the way that high school athletes do.
I mean, he's an older guy.
But Johns is a guy who looks pretty, as freshmen go, is more physically ready than most.
Yeah, and he's a guy who might provide you a little bit more offensive rebounding.
And he's got shooting potential. I think Livers, I don't think offensive rebounding is going to be the gap. I thought Livers actually did a very good job given how much Michigan de-emphasized that.
That's true.
Michigan's offensive rebounding went way up when he was on the floor.
Well, if someone at that spot can create some shots, that really helps the fact that Michigan might not have the shooting that they expect to have.
Yes, and Johns is probably the more likely player to do that.
I mean,
he might be stronger on the ball.
Could be any of the three.
Like, yeah.
Johns is the most physically impressive. Livers will be the most experienced. And Iggy is the guy who gets the most buckets.
Yes. So,
It's going to be a free for all there, and hopefully someone emerges midseason. At center, of course, Moritz Wagner has a decision to make.
Yes, and this is a tough decision to make. Even though he's kind of being projected more as a you know, maybe sneaking into the late first round, but more likely second round and possibly even undrafted. And especially depending on how, I mean, the combine process would be very important for him, but unfortunately, if he goes into the combine this year, that's it. So it's tough because his limitations aren't going to change. He's certainly not going to get younger.
No, he's not ever going to be a good NBA defender. He did add a bunch of rebounding. You know, his Final Four performance was impressive. I think for him, it's like, non-guaranteed contract. Maybe I'm probably going to be in the G League. Do I want that, or do I want another year at Michigan?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, I want him to make whatever decision he wants to make.
Yeah.
But, maybe DJ Wilson's season sticks in his mind a little bit.
DJ was a first rounder, so that's, yeah. You kind of got to go at that point. But.
Well, yes, but I'm more talking in terms of the way his season played out.
Right.
Because he was a guy who is not, I mean, still is because the NBA season is going on. He's a guy who's bounced between the real team and the D League team and is not seeing the court when he's with the real team.
It doesn't really seem like his parents are in need of a cash infusion or anything like that.
Probably not if they're able to travel over to.
So actually, the NCAA pays for that now.
Oh, that's nice. That's good stuff.
Yeah. But anyway, it's probably 50-50. Like, I couldn't tell you either way.
Yeah. I mean, I could legitimately see, he's one of those guys who seems to enjoy college to the point where I could easily see him coming back. And then we're talking about continuing the five out offense.
It's easy if he comes back. It's the same thing it was this year.
Yeah, except better.
Yeah, and Castleton Rutgers.
Yeah.
If he doesn't come back, is kind of the more pertinent
issue. Yes.
So then you move Teskey into the starting lineup.
You unleash Teskey.
Which is good in some ways. He's 7'1". He's a terrific offensive rebounder. He is more of an impact defender.
He is a game-changing defensive player.
Well, I want to get that block rate up. He's not exactly Ike.
I'll put it this way.
He's a lot better than Wagner in certain situations.
I would already say he is close to an elite rim protector, even though he doesn't get as many of those blocks. His steal rate is elite for a center.
That's true.
Absolutely elite. And I have numbers that I would like to read. So, once again, I did the before and after February 1st split because it seems to work for a lot of players on this team. Because the big worry with Teskey, I think, obviously, is how the offense functions with him on the court, especially if Michigan doesn't have a bunch of shooting. And kind of the best testing ground for that was this team when he was on the court.
Sure.
So before, if you keep it just limited to KenPom top 100 teams, so we can use a good sample here, heading into February 1st, Michigan's offense shot just 45.7%. on twos when he was on the floor on offense. Since February 1st, that jumped up to 56.3%.
Okay.
Which is downright elite. And that was they also had a big improvement in their three-point attempt numbers, their offensive rebounding numbers, and their turnover percentage went down. Meanwhile, his defense somehow got even better. On defense, heading into February 1st, if you're talking rim protectors, you're looking at two-point percentage. And Michigan's defense actually allowed 49.2% on two-pointers with Teskey on the floor before February 1st. Since then, 41.1%. And again, this is against KenPom top 100 teams. These are not adjusted numbers. This is a dude who is turning you into a terrible, terrible team inside the arc when he is on the floor. And he improved visibly and dramatically at the pick and roll as the season went on, and learned how to use his frame like a lot of Charles Matthews buckets. When you start going through tournament time, there were a good number of them where Teskey, even if it wasn't a pick and roll situation, just kind of recognized where the play was going and just sealed off one or two defenders. And that's something where I think, Michigan, I suspect they're not going to be a great shooting team, outside shooting team next year. We're hoping for probably pretty good. And a lot of that's going to depend on, I think, Jordan Poole and how much he can carry it. What Teske can bring in terms of potentially lifting this defense up to a higher level than they were even playing at this year, I think is a distinct possibility with him on the court, and that I would say even a probability, because he's only going to get better. This is a young center, and his offensive numbers improved in a way that I do not think is a fluke. So I'm pretty darn excited about. I very much want Mo Wagner to come back. I do not think the outlook changes as much as a lot of people would think if he leaves.
I mean, the one thing that you are concerned about is that having three non-shooters on the floor is a little bit untenable.
Yes. It could change the point guard position a little bit.
We are kind of talking about a guy who has hit some elbow jumpers, and people are talking, he shoots threes in high school.
He shot them in practice.
Could maybe get
out. He could stretch that range. I mean, we did see, you know, maybe a bit of a preview in the Purdue game of a guy who has, in the Purdue Big Ten tournament game, obviously, of a guy whose confidence in his offensive repertoire is improving. He certainly knows where to be more. And, you know, he's a guy who, you know, he isn't going to be the same offensive player as Wagner, but if he can even pop out for just one or two attempts of those a game, that can really change the way defenses have to approach him. You look at Villanova, Amari Spellman was not a guy who was necessarily taking a ton of three-pointers, but just the fact that he could really, really changed how you had to play him. And I'm not saying Teske is going to be Omari Spellman next year. He's a very different type of player, but for a seven-footer, he does have a fair amount of mid-range and possibly even three-point range potential.
And one of the things that I was concerned about going into the Villanova game is that Teske would be unplayable because of the way Villanova runs their offense, and maybe he's just too old school of a post.
If anything, I kind of thought they didn't play him enough.
Well, I mean, he gets 7 minutes, and Michigan's down, and they want the offense out there. But
yeah,
in those 7 minutes, you know, Villanova tried to run a bunch of pick and roll against him, and it just didn't work. So hopefully he'll be able to cope against whatever stretch five types the next year throws at him. It's really going to be like Roby, I think, and that's about it.
In the Big Ten,
yeah. Man, Roby's going to be so good next year. He's going to be nuts.
He'll be a good player.
And then you have Austin Davis and Colin Castleton. Davis barely played this year. When he got in, he did some things.
Yeah, I mean, he looked relatively effective out there.
He had a couple of moments against, like, Isaac Haas, like, in the late first half of the Big Ten tournament game against Purdue.
Yeah, he gets in there for 2 minutes and does not look out of place.
He contested a Haas shot that looks pretty ugly. And he gets in there and he's relatively mobile. He's never going to be a huge usage like Dunkathon guy.
No.
But I was impressed with his ability to, bother shots and go get rebounds. And like, I have relatively high hopes that Austin Davis is going to be like a plus backup five next year if Wagner does
come. Yeah, I mean, he's got legitimate size. He looks a little small next to Teske, but that shouldn't throw you off. Like he's 6'10", 245. This is a kid they call Big Country. And for good reason. And obviously we are working with tiny samples here because Austin Davis played more than 10 minutes once this year, and it was against Alabama A&M.
It's just hints, right?
But he puts up double-digit offensive rebound rate, a defensive rebounding rate in the mid-30s, and a 15% block rate. And it's like, okay, like you're at least capable of doing that. Like, you know.
Also has 12 fouls per 40.
You know, he's hacking a little bit.
Sample sizes are low, people.
Yeah, you know, he's 7 for 11 on twos. I think most of them were dunks or layups.
Maybe
all of them.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
But, you know, as a backup center, especially if Teske is able... Teske, another thing that I think is really promising about him is he was able to be a very effective defensive center this year without being a guy who's hacking you a lot. And especially for a guy who challenges as many shots as he does not have like a foul rate of 5 per 40 for a guy who blocks as many shots as he does is something you can work with and is something that should get better.
His foul rate is 12.
I'm talking about Teske.
Oh, Teske. Right. Okay. I was a little confused.
Okay. Sorry. I'm talking about Teske here. Teske's foul rate, first of all, came down from his freshman year and is quite good, I think, for a guy who is a developing rim protector. I think he'll...
Yeah.
So I think he's a guy who could really...
He gets down to 4 next year.
Soak up a lot of minutes at center, where Wagner, with the way he had to play defense, was a guy where you always had to be prepared to throw your backup in for 20 or 25 minutes.
And then Colin Castleton is a very interesting prospect.
Extremely intriguing for the probably for the future. It's, I mean, this year would be kind of a break glass in case of emergency scenario. I think he's pretty real thin.
He's real thin.
But he's a stretch five.
And he had the second highest block rate on the EYBL.
Yes.
Which is...
He is a stretch five and a rim protector.
Yeah.
Which you don't see those often.
And he shot 38% for his high school this year and took the most shots from deep on his team. A guy who's not ranked that high because he spent most of his high school career absolutely rail thin.
Yeah.
I accidentally clicked on it was either a sophomore year or junior year video, and it was like, oh my God, get that man a sandwich.
Yep.
He has filled out a little bit as a senior, but still is going to be...
He's currently listed 6'10", 215. There is some filling out to do.
And that's probably generous.
Yeah, I think that's generous.
But, you know, as in terms of, a modern big, he's a stretch big. He's very agile. I mean, he might be Isaiah Roby. That's kind of what I feel like that's heading towards. Except he's got maybe an inch or two on Roby.
Roby's more like 6'8", 6'9". Castleton is 6'10", and kind of has the frame, and you wouldn't be surprised if he maybe grew an inch.
Yeah, so he's you probably redshirt him. You definitely redshirt him if Wagner is...
If Wagner's back, it's a guaranteed redshirt. It might be a redshirt even without that.
You always want to have three bigs, but I think you could probably get away with Livers at the five for a little bit.
Yes, and Michigan, this is a team that will have a lot of options and may want to go small at times next year.
So... But it's like Luke, and it's also Luke Jaklich's first guy.
Yeah.
So is that going to be a good defensive center? Probably.
I would like to think so. That man seems to know what he's doing.
So yeah, this recruiting class.
I mean, it's ranked 16th in the country, and I think that's kind of underselling it.
Well, for one, it's way underselling it because it doesn't have Iggy.
It doesn't have Iggy where he should be, which is as a borderline five-star instead of the number 75.
And then you have Julius, who has a Trey Burke senior year.
And is currently 130th on the composite.
And
Foster Lawyer is way above him, and Julius ate Foster's lunch every time they played each other.
Well, you know, when they played, he put up 41 points, and they wouldn't even match him up.
Yeah.
So, this guy is eating you alive, and you're not even going to put Foster Lawyer on this dude?
And Julius physically looks more like a college and potentially NBA player, if we're going to get into
it. Instead of another McPoyle?
Yes. Who's 5'10".
He's not 5'10".
Lawyer.
Lawyer's not 5'10".
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, 5'10 on a good day.
5'10 in mom's heels. Those are only 3-inch heels. They're not I mean, she's a mom.
Yeah. Respectable heels.
Respectable heels, exactly. Nobody's out here saying bad things about Foster Lawyer's mother. Foster Lawyer.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGO Blog. Got another story for you from my wonderful tales of homeownership. There was like a musty smell coming from my crawl space, and when we opened up, there were like a bunch of bugs in there. Anyway, I called EcoIntelligent Homes, and it's a good thing I did because as soon as the spring came, that could have gotten a lot worse. I really recommend these guys. They will find the source of the issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they offer financing. EcoIntelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call them at 248-291-7815 or visit their website at ecointelligenthomes.com.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Count down.
Know what could potentially be as spicy as Michigan's offense next year?
No. Is it spicy? Is that really?
I mean, you know, I expect some spice. Jordan Poole's got spice.
That's true.
Jordan Poole is bringing the heat.
The most hated pick and roll in America is indeed very spicy.
Yes. And what is also bringing the heat is Lantana Hummus's extra spicy three pepper hummus.
I should have seen that coming since this is the Lantana read, but I was like, I don't know what's happening.
But it came out of nowhere, and we switched up who was leading it off. So, I mean, we're keeping people on their toes here. But it is made with white beans and cayenne, chipotle, and jalapeno peppers. So it is for the bold. It is for the Jordan Pools of the hummus consumers.
More the Austin Davis of hummus consumers.
But Austin Davis of hummus consumers, can you tell the people where they can find all of the options?
You can find it at Bush's, Meijer, Kroger, or your local grocer.
There it is. I do enjoy that this preview of next year turned into some wild Michigan State hating. As you know, and that's the other thing that we got to talk about is that the Big Ten looks like it might be freaking awful.
Well, you're not going to get some bounce backs from teams, but it does look wide open. Like, if Ward doesn't come back for Michigan State, and I kind of think he won't, you're looking at, like, Tillman starting, McQuaid starting, maybe Kenny Goins. Like, they have a decent class, but it is a developmental class or something.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be leaning very hard on Cassius Winston and Josh Langford. And
one of those guys seems like a good idea to lean on.
Yeah, but not necessarily against Michigan.
No. Purdue loses everybody except Carson Edwards.
And they might lose Carson Edwards. He has put his name in. And he is a guy. This is a NBA draft class that is kind of light on shot-creating guards. Edwards could be a guy who really sees his stock rise.
Maryland has some dudes coming in.
They do.
They lost Justin Jackson, but they'll get Huerter back. They get Cowan back. Like that looks like...
That's a promising team. That might be the team I think is...
Fernando...
Yeah, I do like Bruno Fernando, too.
Fernando could play for Florida State.
Yeah, he would not look out of place. They do bring in a legit five-star in Jalen Smith. And another top 40 guy in small forward, Aaron Wiggins. They've got talent. I'm not still sold on Turgeon.
I still kind of like Penn State, even though they lost Tony Carr. They were all sophomores.
I've been in a bit of a Twitter battle that I didn't even mean to get into.
I mean,
they do it. I do not disagree. They do have good talent. I like if Mike Reeves. Watkins has his head on straight, yeah. I like him a lot. I think Lamar Stevens is a very good player.
I mean, we're talking about I think they can be an 8 seed.
Yeah, I mean that's what we're, because they still, I mean, they lose Carr, they lose Shep Garner. They're going to have to find some offense from places that they couldn't get it from last year, because Stevens was a high usage guy who was not very efficient.
Yeah.
And Josh Reeves is more of a defensive specialist who is best suited as a role player. At least that's how it's played out thus far. So they could have guys break through into bigger roles, but I more think that's a right side of the bubble team.
Indiana.
There are a lot of wild cards because there's been a lot of coaching turnover lately in the conference, so you're trying to figure out, you know, who's getting the right guys in the system, how much of this season was that for some teams, because sometimes it looked really ugly out there. But I don't know, this does, they do bring in some talent. I mean, Jerome Hunter was a guy that Michigan was pretty hot after. Yeah. I mean, I think they were quite, it was either him or Braz Dacus, and I think Michigan was quite happy to land Iggy. But
Hunter came off the board first.
Yes, Hunter did drop first.
So, and that was a little bit disappointing. And then, yes. Like a couple of sites.
And he is from Pickerington North, and that school has been good to Michigan.
Yeah. I mean, they'll get better, but that is again that's a 9 seed, maybe that's an 8 seed.
And they did get another guy that Beilein was after in Demayze Anderson.
That was kind
of
like
he was more of a backup plan, but still, if you got a guy who got a Beilein scholarship offer, you might be on the right track there.
But they're going to be so bad at defense because they don't have a center.
Yeah,
they played a 6-7 guy at center the whole year.
That's the concern, is Juwan Morgan was asked to really do everything for them this year and is probably going to be asked to do that again. And, I mean, they need to get Deron Davis back from injury. That will be a big boost for them.
I would,
because he is an actual post player. And he was promising as a freshman and was looking promising until he got hurt this year. But they do also lose decent chunks of their backcourt, including Robert Johnson, who's a pretty talented player. I don't know. They're another team where it's like, you know, things break the right way. They could be a tourney team, but it still feels like...
I mean, someone's going to be like an Ohio State where they break out. They have
someone's going to come through.
And then you have Maryland, you have Michigan.
I still like, you know, if Carson Edwards comes back, Purdue is a team that's going to be a factor. And also, like, even though they lose just about everybody, you know, Harms was just a freshman this year.
Yeah, Harms is...
Painter's a good coach. Michigan did actually go after Nojel Eastern, the 6'6". Point forward with these sideways spinning free throws. I'm not sure how that's going to play out, but he is a very good defender.
It's a good guy to pair with Carson Edwards.
Yeah. So you do have that. I mean, I don't expect them to be nearly as good as they were this year.
What is like a wardless Michigan State like as a team? Like, where? I mean, they're like a 6 seed or something, if that. Like, I mean, you do have like one of those freshmen is going to be a decent player
you do tend to get that.
Bingham, maybe, or
yeah, I like Bingham. I like his potential, but he was a guy who's kind of being looked at, and he rose late.
Well, Michigan, I think, was his first offer. I thought.
Yeah, and he was a very late riser in the rankings, but actually ended up quite high. He is 57th on the composite, but between him and Gabe Brown, and even though I don't really want to put the potential out there, Foster Lawyer could overcome his complete lack of... If he's a guy who can just hit a bunch of threes off the bounce, then he might be able to overcome it. But, I mean, I don't see him playing over Cassius Winston a whole lot next year.
Well, he'll be a bench option.
Yeah. They got Kithier coming in, who got screwed out of playing his final season of high school ball, so he might be getting underrated.
Like, he's just Austin Davis or Costello or something.
See, he might be better than that, but maybe, I don't know.
But how would you know?
Yeah, we can't. He plays senior season of high school ball. And in the meantime, you might be looking at Kenny Goins starting at the four.
Yeah.
And Josh Langford being your highest usage shooter.
Northwestern has its best recruiting class ever.
Yeah, I wonder what changed there.
Well, I mean, who cares?
No, I don't care, but Northwestern fans do. It's great. I love that, like, the Northwestern fans I follow hate their most successful coach of all time.
Yeah, that's good. What if Isaiah Washington is now, like, always the Michigan?
I mean, there is, like, Carson Edwards was kind of like that as a freshman.
It's true.
So you do get that, where guys break out because their bad idea shots start turning into good ideas. And he is a candidate. I said it heading into this year, and I will stand by it. I just don't trust a Richard Pitino coach team to follow through.
Very fair. Is Nebraska interesting? They get Palmer back
a little bit.
They get Roby back.
Yeah, I mean, they're a sleeper. They need to start winning games away from home.
Well, they need a point guard, and
yeah, they also need a point guard, and yeah, like an offense that makes some sense. They do have a lot of defensive potential. They have nice, like, you know,
like if you listen
long pieces.
If you listen to the people who do the good bubble rankings, they should have been in the tournament easily, and that's without getting one more bucket against Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of being a tournament quality team, they were there. In terms of having a tournament quality resume, they were not there.
Well, if you judge by the way the committee judges,
if you judge by the committee judges it, and I don't think the committee judges it in a wholly unfair way. Yeah. I didn't think they were that close.
They just need.
I still would have rather seen like St. Mary's over them.
They just can't shoot. That's their deal. Like,
yeah, and not being able to shoot is a problem.
Roby needs to take like 200 threes this year. He took 42, hit 41%. How does that happen? Their point guard is at 29%.
You see that with a lot of bigs though, who are starting to, like, young bigs who are starting to get comfortable.
Yeah.
Where like you're starting to test that range a little bit. You're mostly doing it when you're wide open.
All right, I'm making the call. Isaiah Roby, Big Ten Player of the Year, 2019.
That's a bold one.
I love him.
Like, okay, if Carson Edwards comes back, I think I'm going with him.
But like Roby, like, Michigan's just killing Nebraska.
You love Roby,
but like every time they tried to drive at Roby, they got.
I don't think their team's going to be good enough, and I don't think he's going to put enough good enough numbers.
If they were 13-5 in this Big Ten, they can be 13-5 in next year's Big Ten.
Has Keita Bates Diop declared yet?
Yes, he's out.
Okay, good. Never mind that potential option.
Ohio State is interesting because they have two very efficient bigs.
Yes, but that's the problem. They're kind of, I don't know. They might be heading in the wrong direction in terms of like the style of basketball that they're playing. They're kind of stuck in that with the way that their roster fits together at the moment. But I mean, like, this is a team that's got to replace like 47% of their point guard minutes that were being filled by Andrew Dockage.
Well, you know, can't be worse.
It's fair.
Wisconsin.
This year was just so rough.
Okay, they return everybody.
They do. Unless Ethan Happ is like, I literally cannot take any more of this.
They get back Dimitri Trice, which isn't like woo-ha, but like...
He is a potential Big Ten quality basketball player, and they were lacking those severely this year.
You get Brad Davidson going from a freshman to a sophomore.
Yeah, he could, as much as I hate to say he could, you know, be all right, I'm saying it through gritted teeth.
Like, they get everybody back. They get
Brevin Pritzel.
Well, you know, like, the Ford kid is a 6'8" shooter. Like, that's...
Yeah, he's an interesting player, even though he, like, never ventured inside the arc.
Yeah, I mean... I think Wisconsin,
they lost like they had a big transfer.
Like, this, what's going to happen this year is the Big Ten's going to get six bids, and like four of them are going to be like from 8 to 10, and then Michigan and Maryland will get good seats.
My prediction is Michigan State's going to get one based partly off reputation.
Yeah, that's a good one. But you know,
I'm okay with that. It sets up another upset. And also, by the way, my preseason pick, if Carson Edwards goes for Big Ten Player of the Year, is Jordan Poole.
Well, obviously.
I don't know whether it had to be said or not, but I felt the need and desire.
That is even more off the board
to put that out
than
there.
Isaiah Roby.
I strongly disagree.
All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed this basketball season, because if you didn't, nothing will.
What
make
is
you
wrong
happy.
With you?
But now we're done talking about it.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Brother, my brother, you can hold it all together. Night brings night, where it's cold and dark forever. Fire lines are right, I never want to see the night. Why, oh why? But in the darkness, I'll be back with you. Brother, my brother, you got to hold yourself together.
So we'd like to welcome in Anthony Ciotti, who is, of course, Dave's special guest on the Supplemental Podcast. And if you want 75 minutes of wall-to-wall hockey talking, you should check that out if you haven't already. This is necessarily going to be a Cliff's Notes version of it for the hockey dilettantes. Not that there are any here.
No, not at all.
About Michigan's Frozen Four experience, which kicks off tonight against Notre Dame.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm not nervous about it because I feel like I used it all up for basketball. Mm-hmm. And, once we get to the day of the game, the game actually starts, I'll be terrified, of course. But
I am really excited. I think it's going to be two great games, Thursday.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because Michigan played Notre Dame early in January, and Notre Dame's the number one team in the country. And Michigan is below 500. They're scuffling. I'm not even looking at the pairwise. And even though they get swept by Notre Dame in that series, the games are both 2-1. They're both very even, and that feels like the turning point for Michigan's season.
Yes, I would agree. I remember being at the Friday game, because they played Friday in Ann Arbor, and thinking that they were like right on equal footing with Notre Dame in a lot of ways. And it was kind of surprising because we were used to watching them play pretty poorly most of the season up until that point. And even the week before at the GLI wasn't really all that impressive either. So it was really a great weekend to watch, and it did feel like something was turning around.
And Notre Dame is sort of like, well, I don't really have to say what they're sort of like. They're a Big Ten team that we've played four times. Notre Dame is a typical Jeff Jackson team where they don't have a ton of like high-end scoring, mm-hmm. but they are super disciplined. I remember the second series that Michigan swept, I don't think there was more than one or two odd man rushes all weekend. They have great goaltending from Cale Morris, a Hobie finalist who hopefully won't win because he's a goalie and goalies don't deserve to win. Anthony's a goalie. Goalies don't deserve to win the Hobie. Come on.
Sometimes.
Not
this year.
Not this guy. Sitting behind the most disciplined defense possibly in America.
Correct.
So given the fact that we've seen Michigan play Notre Dame four times, twice successfully, twice less than successfully, what would you be looking for early in this game to either calm your nerves or shoot them through the roof?
I mean, I think it's going to go just like the other games have gone for the most part. I think two of the games, Notre Dame outshot Michigan heavily, even strength. But as you were pointing out earlier, like they have not scored a lot of even strength goals. So they're probably getting a lot of shots from the outside. My biggest thing would be if Michigan played them the same way they've been playing them. I mean, I would feel really good about that. I don't think a whole lot is going to change. I mean, Notre Dame really hasn't been playing well the last 2 months. So it's quite possible that Michigan could come out and have an advantage. But I do think both teams are going to be really well prepared. I think Jackson's going to get a rein on their slide, you know, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be very similar to the other four games.
Well, so the first game is a 36-27 Michigan shot advantage. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame scores both of their goals on the power play in a 2-1 win. The second game is another 2-1 game in which shots are 36-34 Notre Dame, and power plays are about even that weekend. So Notre Dame gets another power play goal and their only even strike marker of the year. Then it's a 2-4 loss for Notre Dame against Michigan. Shots are dead even. And then the final game is a 1-0 win for Michigan, and shots are, again, approximately dead even. So this has been a team that plays Notre Dame well, and Michigan should have a slight advantage beyond just the tied season series because Quinn Hughes and Norris missed the first game after the World Juniors, the game at Notre Dame where they won 2-1. So that's with the way Hughes is playing right now, you know, he's the kind of guy who can break open even a very disciplined defense and kind of create those 5-by-5 chances that I think are going to decide the game.
Yeah, I do think Michigan's going to have the two best skaters on the ice. Notre Dame's going to have the best player in the goalie, right? But like the two best skaters on the ice are going to be Michigan.
Who's and the second?
Marody.
Marody, okay.
Yeah,
I was just,
as of right now, I think so.
Just clarifying.
Yeah, I mean,
I was really proud that that was going to be my guess.
And I think that's going to really turn the tide for Michigan if it does, especially if you look at the way Hughes has been playing, even in the last weekend where he was able to get the puck deep on his own a few times.
Yeah,
that really helps them out. I think that Mel's been playing them quite a bit, so he's really gone to 2.5 pairings rather than 3.
That's something that he said, mm-hmm. like he was being interviewed and he was talking about how Hughes is a special player and they're going to be out there for 25 to 30 minutes a game.
That's good, and I think someone of Quinn Hughes' talent level should be, especially in games like
and
this.
I think that is a change from Red. Red didn't really like to shorten until, like, overtime.
The only time that I can remember Red doing that was when they had the Trouba and Merrill pairing, when they were, like, in dire need to, like, win every game to make the tournament from January on.
Yeah.
Like, those guys were playing half the game for, like, 3 months. But, yeah, I agree with you. Like, typically Red never did that.
And Mel is actually much more, I guess, modern about certain things, and that's definitely one of them. So, you know, I feel pretty good about the game tonight against Notre Dame, especially because there weren't very many power plays in any of these games. So for a team that's main weakness is getting on the penalty kill, mm-hmm. you know, a team that you played four times in the regular season and most of those team times you get through half the game before a penalty got called, you add in the fact that it's like a playoff hockey environment and the whistles get even tighter, mm-hmm. like I think that's good because it's going to be 5x5, and I think Michigan has been superior over 240 minutes so far.
Yeah, I do think Michigan is going to win, and I agree with you for those reasons, basically.
I mean, it's hockey Plinko, so that Slaker goal was a gift and one that Michigan will happily take, so anything can happen. Air Force got St. Cloud State out of this tournament immediately, number one seed versus number 16, and that's just life in the NCAA hockey tournament.
I don't think, well, so one game, obviously, you're right, but like if you look at these two teams side by side, I mean, a seven-game series was probably going to go seven games. I mean, they've played each other tight four games. Like, this is probably going to be...
Well, this is game five.
Exactly. And I feel it's going to feel like that, and I mean, if this was a game seven, it would feel like it. I feel like this is going to be really indicative of like the quality of the teams and the way they've played each other. Where I don't think there's going to be a high variance of like the outcome, basically. I think it's going to be tight, low scoring, and I think Michigan's probably – I do think Michigan will win.
Well, and they have the best player on the ice, mm-hmm. and they'll have him on the ice for half the game. Mm-hmm. So this is a moment for Quinn Hughes, I think.
Absolutely.
Which is weird because he's a defenseman, but that's what Quinn Hughes does. He disrupts your assumptions. And then hypothetical final between either UMD or Ohio State. Which one of those teams do you prefer?
Michigan. I go back and forth on this.
Okay.
The Ohio State reasons are more like
they're 5-0 against Michigan this year, which isn't great.
Right, but you have to. You can't. It would be really hard to go 6-0. And I feel like Michigan's improved against them every time they've played, and I feel like the familiarity is something that would play into Michigan's favor a little bit. The issue I have with Duluth is they have more talent. And you get a higher variance there. Like, you get a higher ceiling, but maybe a lower floor.
Yeah.
With Ohio State, their floor is very, very, very high.
Yeah.
And so that would be the one thing that would kind of concern me is I don't necessarily think Michigan's had a lot of matchups against really talented, well-coached teams. And that's where the kind of fear of Duluth comes in. They're a younger team. So they made the Frozen Four. They made the title game last year. Lost, graduated six guys for the pros, so they had six players play AHL or NHL games last year. They backfilled those guys with pretty much equally talented freshmen. They had five guys in the World Junior team, so they're a very talented team.
Yeah, UMD's actually recruiting like gangbusters these days. They
yes.
have four guys, apparently, on the national team that just got picked. So they are not...
They're becoming power.
Yeah, they're not a... Oh, this is... just Minnesota Duluth. This right. is a really talented team.
Yeah, this is not the program from 2011 that Michigan played.
Right.
It's like an illegitimate national power now. And I do – so I do think that their record, even though they have the most losses in the tournament, I believe, 14, they're still not like a pushover. I do – I mean, they're a good team. It's not a fluke that they're there. And I do – like I do have a fear of like having to play against their top line, and they do have two good defensive pairings, like really good defensive pairings. So and a good goalie. So it's not going to be some kind of pushover if they upset Ohio State.
Does Ohio State like putting it on Denver change your mind a little bit? I was surprised by that kind of. I mean, that game was played largely in Denver's end. It was. I was shocked.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Ohio State, if the game gets away from Duluth.
Yeah,
But I do. I definitely think Ohio State's the best team left of the four, and the Denver game did kind of change my mind a little bit. I thought they were just kind of a mirror image of Notre Dame in a lot of ways, but they've done a few things the last few months that Notre Dame hasn't, and they've been consistently good the whole year.
Yeah.
So I mean, what were they, fourth, and Notre Dame was one? Going to the tournament. Yeah. So it's really not that big of a margin.
And Ohio State had been playing better down the stretch.
Right. And so that's why I would favor Ohio State over any of the other teams left.
The one thing that really jumped off the screen when I started looking at, the Frozen Four is that even though Michigan is 0-5 against the Buckeyes, the last three times they've played, they've had a Corsi advantage. Mm-hmm. And the series at Ohio State, where Michigan got swept, they actually outshot them almost 2-1, 5-on-5 in terms of shot attempts. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they have a good goalie, they have a good system, but that was a much more lopsided game in Michigan's favor than you might imagine by the final score. So, I think if Michigan does get Ohio State in the national championship game, that's not going to be a matchup between a team that has won five straight games and should just expect to roll over Michigan. I think it'll be a terrific game, and I think Michigan will actually have an advantage 5-on-5.
Yeah, I don't really count the first two games because Michigan was not a good team when they played.
It's true.
I mean, they were below Michigan State in pairwise at that time. I mean, they were like high 30s, I think. So
that's true.
I mean, it's really hard to say that. I mean, they got run off the ice Thanksgiving weekend. Like, it wasn't even competitive. But the other two games were better, and then the playoff game was much better. I mean, you had made a point where Quinn Hughes hit two posts, and yes. You know, Michigan had a lot of really good chances. They lost in overtime. So, they, you know, basically played Ohio State to a draw in Columbus. So I do think that, you know, Michigan can win the game. I don't think Ohio State's going to be an overwhelming favorite by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, so Michigan goes to Ohio State, and they lose 4-0. Two power play goals on three attempts for Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Michigan outshoots them 32-20. Four goals, 20 shots. Next night, they lose 5-3, and they outshoot them 31-29. In Corsi, mm-hmm. that was more like 71-41.
How early were the goals in the first game?
The first game, they had 1-1 and then 2. So, you know, Michigan just couldn't put the puck in the net. I remember watching that game and just being pretty frustrated that, you know, this is not a game that should be 4-0.
Whenever I watched Ohio State this year, I felt like they're going to give up stuff from the outside, but nothing from the high danger areas. So I think that will be Michigan's challenge, is getting in there. And they do a better job of that now that Hughes is kind of playing, you know, much better the second half of the season. Like, he was driving a lot of them getting into the high danger areas in the playoff game especially. So I think that would be the difference. In the earlier matchups, Michigan couldn't even get close to the danger areas to shoot. So I kind of think that's Ohio State's game. I mean, that's pretty much Notre Dame's game in a lot of ways too, keeping opponents out of the middle.
I mean, all three of the Big Ten teams in this Frozen Four are fairly similar.
Yeah, honestly, you're right. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think the Hughes is the kind of the difference maker for Michigan. And the difference maker for Ohio State and Notre Dame is that they've been in the same system mm-hmm. for 3-4 years, depending on which team we're talking about here.
Right.
And they're better at it than Michigan was, especially early in the season, because it's a coaching transition that's always going to come with some costs.
Right. So I would say Hughes and Marody, and then the rest of Michigan's defense core is not – I mean, they're also pretty good. If you look at where they're drafted, Ohio State and Notre Dame don't have the same level of athlete, and I think that makes up for the difference in goaltending. So I think that's where you see them all being pretty similar in structure, but the effectiveness is slightly different. Like, Michigan's been a higher scoring team, I think, since January 1st. I saw that today. They're the highest scoring team in the country. And then that's where I think the trade-off is with the goaltending.
Well, and then the special teams, of course. So Michigan has terrible, terrible special teams. Yeah. And that's – like, if they lose, it's probably going to be because that they get crushed on a couple of penalty kills.
Yeah, I would say, like, I still don't want to see them take, like, 4 or 5 penalties in a game.
No, God, no.
Right.
Like, I think we were talking, like, during the first round, like, even if they let, like, an obvious penalty on the other team go early, I'd be happy with that.
Oh, 100%. Especially after seeing, like, Northeastern's power play against them. I was like, oh, my gosh, I don't want to see another penalty in this game. BU was a little bit different story. I didn't think they, like, really had solved Michigan's power play at all. Like, at the end of the game, when I wasn't even worried about Michigan taking penalties, honestly. Like,
I... Braver man than
speaks,
I.
Speaks more so to the BU coaching more than anything else, but...
Yeah, they are the Kentucky of college hockey, except Cal actually gets some mileage out of his dudes.
Yeah.
All right, well, so how do you feel?
I mean, I don't...
You can't predict anything. It's hockey, but how do you feel?
I feel like Michigan has a very good chance. Yeah. And I do somewhat take exception to the hockey Plinko thing. I mean, we could talk some other time, but...
It's not... completely random.
No, absolutely not.
But it's very random.
Well, it's higher variance because, like, if you know, it's a single elimination. If these teams were all doing best of seven, I would still think Michigan would have a good chance.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a pretty good
comment. It'd also be nice to roll through a couple rivals on the way to a title.
Just right. On the Plinko thing, I was doing the post about how the basketball tournament is usually good enough.
Right.
Yes. So, like, top three teams in strength of record almost always going to be the victors of the tournament. Right. That does not happen in hockey. Like, half the time it's number 12 or number 9 or number 8. And so that's the Plinko thing, is that sometimes you get champions that are deeply unsatisfying.
Yeah, 100%. I also think some of that is effect of the season. I mean, the season's about the same size as basketball, but there's less teams, so I feel like there's less variance amongst those teams.
Well, you also just get that in hockey in general. Like in the NHL, you have and you've had 8 seeds win the Stanley Cup before,
yeah, right?
Hockey,
and that's with 7-game series. So if that like you get a hot goalie sometimes in the playoffs, and
yeah, that doesn't really
it
happen.
Can just carry you all the way through
in the NBA, right? Like
the
number one seed gets knocked off in a 5-game series against it was like Denver versus Dallas,
Seattle when Mutombo is holding the ball on the ground. Like you get that image, like Golden State beating Dallas in the Oracle with the Baron Davis team. But that's like there are like the two memorable instances, and that's it.
Right. In hockey, it just happens all the time. It's like baseball; it happens all the time in baseball too.
Yeah. So.
Right. A lot of that's explainable in hockey, though.
Well, but like
hockey's a very random sport.
You're never going to get a 72-10 hockey team.
No.
When that happens.
The Red Wings tried very hard, and they didn't get there. Yeah, so if they couldn't, I'm not sure anyone can.
But if you made the nets bigger, then hockey would be more decisive because teams with the possession advantage.
Then those 2002 Wings might have won 72 games.
Yeah. Teams with better shooters would win more often.
Yeah.
Which is better talent, right?
Yeah. So.
So to go back to what you're saying, I think it's very evenly matched, and theoretically, if they were 7-game series, Michigan would have a very good chance in all of them. So I do think they have a very good chance overall. And I do think they'll have to play Notre Dame and Ohio State is what I'm guessing.
All right. Well, there it is.
What do you think?
I feel good about playing Notre Dame.
I think it's the best draw possible for out of the four.
Yeah. I mean, we've played them 4 times. I think that they've kind of faded and Michigan has come up. And they've scored 1 even strength goal against us in 4 games. And honestly, didn't seem very close to scoring a bunch more. So I feel good about that matchup. I'd honestly feel better about playing Ohio State than UMD just because, like, I know what playing Ohio State feels like, and it felt real bad early in the season. And it felt fairly good the last 3 times, even though Michigan got 0 points out of those. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, Duluth is a wild card.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I am.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be fun.
Yeah, and it's a great start for Mel Pearson. The OHL draft is upcoming, and we'll see how that 2002 recruiting class holds up after it. But if it even half sticks, it's pretty, pretty promising.
Yeah, they've definitely turned a lot of things around in a very short time. So even, I mean, save this good run, I mean, their program's in good shape.
Yep. All right, thanks. And of course, if this was not enough hockey talk for you, tune into Aces Podcast tomorrow. check out the supplemental podcast that was posted about a week ago.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook. Jordan Poole's winning the Wooden Award next year.
Bust the ass!